This morning's reading comes from John chapter 12, verses 1 to 8. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus arrived in Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honour. Martha served, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Then Mary took a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. As keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me.
So the next few weeks, we're going to be applying what we've thought about the last few weeks. We've been revisiting some of our core values and just doing that in a little bit more depth. We've been remembering, just to recap, first of all, and most important, that Jesus is Lord, and therefore we are not. That seems like a fairly obvious one for a Christian church, but you know, it's one thing to say it, it's another thing to live it. But he is Lord, we are his people, so we gather in his name, and therefore we don't gather in our own name. We don't kind of go, ba-da, here we all are, you know, come along because we're great. We don't. We gather in his name because he's great, and that we're called to live like him. We reach out to those people who don't know him, regardless of what other people think of them. And because of that, we deliberately put aside all thoughts of reputation and comfort, because the whole point of us being left here, someone said to me this week, it was one of you probably, who said that thing about the church is the only organisation that exists for the benefit of its non-members. And that's essentially it, isn't it? That's what we're here for. And we're called to be inclusive. We're called to be prophetic. That means that we'll dissent and we'll stand up to anyone who tries to make us or anyone else do something contrary to God's revealed will. Where do we find his revealed will? In the Bible. So it all makes sense, doesn't it? And we're called to gather, to meet together out of the world, to support and encourage and challenge one another, but with the aim of going back into the world to show God's love, to speak God's truth. And that's what we're here for. And last week we thought about the fact that we're here to serve. We're here to serve the unlovely, the unworthy, the ungrateful. We're to serve those who take advantage. They think, well, they're a soft touch. Fine, that's okay. We're not called to work out whether someone is good enough to serve. We're just called to serve. And you remember last week we saw that Jesus actually washed Judas's feet. And Judas used his newly cleansed feet to go trotting off to the temple to sell Jesus out. So we're freed from the need for a Disney ending. We don't need, oh, Judas was so challenged and convicted by Jesus washing his feet that he said, what a bad person I am. I'm never going to do such a thing. He didn't. He just went and betrayed Jesus. That's actually what real life is like, isn't it? We don't always get the happy Disney ending. And actually, you know, that's quite freeing. Initially, you kind of go, well, that's quite cynical, that's quite sceptical. Actually, it really isn't. It's quite realistic, because Disney and Pollyanna isn't true. We like to see that, but it's not necessarily so. What we have is a bigger, better ending. We see the end of history. We see the end of time when God comes to put everything right. That is so much better than a Disney ending. But before the party, there's a punch-up. And so we live in that age before Jesus comes to sort things out, where things are still messy, where you don't always get what you feel like you deserve. Sometimes that's a good thing. But life's full of raggedy edges. It just is. And the more we can adjust to reality and trust in God who says, it's going to be okay. In this world, you'll have trouble, but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. We can live with a realistic hope rather than being constantly disappointed that the Disney ending didn't happen. We can lift up our eyes from needing to have fake closure and look and see that Jesus is Lord. And that's the answer that we need. So I now need to find where I am. Oh, that's right. We don't do it to please men, so that or women for that matter, so that people can kind of go, oh, you know, what lovely people. What, you know, what a lovely thing to do. That's nice. Don't get me wrong. But we don't do it for that. And we saw last week that if we seek to please people, chances are at some point that's going to come at cross purposes to pleasing God. And we need to please God first. And so, as Max Lucado says, we serve for the applause of one. But that one has a capital O. We serve for God's pleasure, not for our own. And so here we have Mary, and she's serving, she's sharing, she's doing this lovely thing. And one of the first things that kind of stands out is it would make a terrible Disney, wouldn't it? Because the first thing that happens is she does this beautiful, humbling thing, is Judas criticizes her. Don't forget, at this point in the story, nobody knows that Judas is a bad un. And we know that with hindsight, don't we? But they didn't know. They were all there. And Judas pipes up and says, well, she shouldn't have done that. And you could have, and all this kind of thing. And you get the feeling that actually the others were going, yeah, actually, that would have made more sense. You know, you don't find one of the other disciples saying, you know, chill your jets, just simmer down, she's doing a lovely thing. It was Jesus that had to step in and defend her. Can you see that? Because sometimes we are swayed by what other people think and what other people say, particularly if they say it and it kind of makes sense. Because they didn't know what we know now. And isn't that the story of most of our lives? If we knew then what we know now, wouldn't it be different? Oh, yeah. So what are we sharing? What are we sharing? We've seen, and we're going to look at what Mary shares. We are sharing our love and our faith in Jesus. The object of our love and faith is Jesus. And because we love and believe, we share him. Jesus is the only way to know God. That's what he says, and I totally believe it. And so we share him humbly, respectfully, but because we know him. Because we know he is true, that he's alive. And that the best thing that we could wish for anyone is that they would know him too. Doesn't mean all their problems go away. But it means that the one who has promised, I will never leave you or forsake you, is with them in their journey. How do we do that? Well, according to what we've said over the last few weeks, we do that prophetically. We do that inclusively. We do that through serving. We do that in love and faith, by words and deeds. That all sounds very good, but how specifically is what we want to get into? Well, we do that individually, don't we? As we go out, we have our opportunities to serve and to share, to truth tell, to love, to do those things. We also do that together. We do that, actually, as Jeremy Hunt was suggesting, through letter writing, through political engagement. We're called out of the world to gather together, but not to be completely detached like little hermits living away and hiding away from the big bad world. We gather together to meet with our great big God, and then we look back and say, actually, that big bad world isn't so big and bad, because our God is big and good, and he's bigger than the world that he made. And so we go out with confidence. And so certainly we stand up. We try and support the people that are in a harder place than us. To write letters, to make phone calls, to lobby MPs, to support charities, to do all those things that we can, and certainly to pray as well for people like Open Doors and Barnabas and no end of others as well that are seeking to do God's will in the world. So that's kind of just an aside, but when we're talking about serving, when we're talking about sharing, that's kind of what we're thinking about. But let's learn a few things from our Bible passage. We're in John chapter 12. I'll just turn to the right page. John chapter 12. Here we are. So it's before the Passover, and Jesus comes to Bethany. Bethany is a couple of miles away from Jerusalem, which is actually the epicenter of all the powerful people that want to kill Jesus. And so, you know, he's planning on going there. He knows what's going to happen. And so instead of kind of staying away, as far away as possible, which is what many of us would do, you know, if there's people that are out to kill you, you kind of go, well, it's what I was taught in the army. I was taught one thing when it came to sort of self-defense and that kind of thing. The best self-defense is to be somewhere else. This is good advice. I try and follow that as much as possible. Sometimes you just can't run fast enough. But, you know, it's good advice. And so Jesus, you would think, you know, he's got a ministry to fulfill and all everyone loves him, and nearly everyone loves him and everything like this. You'd think, oh, well, he'll stay up in Galilee. But no. He goes to Bethany, to Mary and Martha's house, because he knows that, you know, you don't actually avoid trouble. You might avoid that one, but you walk into this one, because basically that's what life is like. And so he goes to his friends. And when you know there's going to be trouble, isn't it nice to have friends? Isn't it nice just to kind of decompress a little bit? Incidentally, they learned things from him, but he wasn't sitting having a teach-in that night. He was having a meal with some friends, just hanging out with people he loved and who loved him. And that's a really important thing. But true to their personalities, Martha is busily serving, Mary is worshipping, and so, you know, if you were here last Sunday night, you kind of go, well, that fits the pattern, you know, same again, you know, there we are. And just in brackets, just so that you know, there's a couple of different accounts of Jesus being anointed. This account takes place in Bethany, okay? There's another one that takes place in Galilee, which is in Luke chapter 7, and that's where a prostitute comes in, or a woman of bad repute, let's put it that way, comes in and wipes, does the anointing of his feet. Different people, okay? So don't confuse the two. Mary is very much a kind of virtuous woman, and she anoints his feet. But when you combine the different accounts, if you've got one of those harmony of the gospel things in the back of your Bible or anything like that, if you do that, you'll actually see that Mary anointed both his head and his feet, just, you know, for completeness sake. But what is most important is that it's an expression of her love. And Jesus mentions that in the other account, that it's about love, it's about worship. She knows that he is actually going to endure suffering and death. How does she know? Because last time we met her, she was sitting at his feet listening to him. She was paying attention, and she had understood that he said, I am in fact going to Jerusalem, where the scribes and Pharisees are going to hand me over to be mocked, to be beaten, and I will die, and in 3 days I will rise from the dead. He'd actually said that to his disciples numerous times, and she had obviously heard that, because she came to anoint him for his burial. She came while he was still alive. It's that old thing about give the roses to the person while they're alive, rather than bring them to the funeral. Yeah? Those things, those lovely things that are sometimes said in a eulogy, say them while the person can hear them. Encourage them. Say, you know, you really touched my life. You've been an example to me. Those things, they're nice when they're said at a funeral, but they're so much nicer when they're said to the person. Seize the day. Don't wait till it's sort of too late in that sense. One of the lovely things, one of those sort of profound little things that you just notice, is that one of the people that didn't go on Easter morning to anoint the body was Mary. Why? She'd already done it. Seize the day. Seize the day. Do it now as opposed to later. If there's some good work, if there's some word of encouragement, if there's some act of service or love that will touch someone's life, do it now. Why not? Don't leave it, because a week later, it's an entirely different scene, isn't it? It's just a thought. Why not? So she shows her devotion to Jesus before it's too late. And I love the fact that it was, you know, there was a house full of people. We don't know how many were there, but there was certainly Lazarus, Mary, Martha, Jesus, 12 disciples. Probably there were quite a few others, weren't there? And so it's quite a public act that she does. It's an extravagant act. It's quite lavish of service and worship, isn't it? And it's quite unembarrassed. Judas is sort of embarrassed and sort of grumpy because he can see his profits going, you know, but she does this thing and other people see it. And other people have their own reactions about that, don't they? But do you think Mary was focused on what other people thought or what Jesus thought? She was doing it for the applause of one. She was doing it because she loved Jesus, not because she was worried about what other people said. And that is really important. And Jesus called it a good work and he commended her. He said, actually, you know, this is the kind of thing that brings me pleasure. And so he defended her. Just in terms of how lavish would it be, it's about a year's wages for your, you know, for your sort of average farm worker. A year's wages, that's quite a lot of money, isn't it? You know. And yet she gave this willingly. She knelt to break the perfume and anoint his feet. She humbled herself. She took the kind of position, if you like, of a slave. She uncovered her hair to wipe his feet. And in that culture, you don't uncover your hair. You know, if you speak to a Muslim these days, women who cover their hair, it's because it's their glory. And it's a really big deal if you know any Muslims, if you have a chance to speak to them normally rather than just kind of being all weird with them. They're actually really nice people and they actually understand a few things. I know that sounds like heresy, but it's not, you know. And some of them are really good and nice people. And their understanding of head covering and to have a woman uncover her hair in public and then do something as outrageous as wipe someone's feet with them. She is showing worship and humility and the most incredible honour. And she's doing it because she's entirely focused on him, not everyone else. That's a really big deal. And of course, because of that, she was criticised. She was misunderstood because it was an outrage. You know, she was a virtuous woman. She's acting like this. I mean, what? I mean, they're respectable people at the Baptist Church. What on earth are they doing? Welcoming people like that, reaching out to people like that. We need to make sure we're on the right side of the story when we read stories like this, don't we? We need to make sure that we're focused on Jesus, not on reputation. But when somebody gives their best, particularly when they give their best entirely focused on Jesus, it will be misunderstood. So, you know, just take that into account and then carry on doing it anyway. They didn't know, of course, that Judas, in Jesus' own words, was a devil. That's what he calls him in John chapter 6. They didn't know that he was a wrong'un. He was the treasurer. I mean, you only give the treasurer's bag to people that are of good standing, don't you? You know, if we had a bank robber in our midst, we'd have a discussion before we made them treasurer, wouldn't we? At least as a church. You know, because you have to kind of just think it through. So Judas is, you know, in good standing. He's respected. He's the treasurer. He's got a bit of clout. In this church, he'd be one of the office holders. You know, because we have the secretary, we have the treasurer, we have, it's an important role. And so the office holder, the treasurer, Judas, says, actually, I think this was wasteful. I don't think this was good at all. And the other's like, ooh, I hadn't thought that like that. I mean, I was just caught in the moment. I mean, it was just like, right, did you see what she did? And so he's giving them a way of thinking that, you know, quite often we embrace the first thing that makes any sense, don't we? And to an extent, it does make common sense. It's good sense. The money could have been sold. It could have been given to the poor. But actually Jesus says, no, there's stuff that you're not taking into account. You're not taking into account the fact that I am going to die. That she is showing me her love and worship before I die, while there is still an opportunity. And this is going to go down in history as something beautiful. How do we know that? Well, we know that if you go to any records office, look down over the years and see how many children are called Mary. How many parents call their children Mary? Quite a lot. How many parents call their children Judas? Not that many, you know. So just in terms of our culture, Judas is synonymous for a betrayer, for a wrong'un, isn't it? And so it's part of our kind of cultural fabric, an understanding that actually the way of worship is better than the way of money grabbing and reputation and, you know, that other way. And so what she did was a blessing to Jesus. It was a blessing to the whole house, like we said. It filled the house with a beautiful smell, adding to the smell of the cooking and everything like that. I just want to sum up and say, if you think of Mary, Martha and Lazarus, they're in one sense representative, and we're going to unpack this in the next couple of weeks. Martha represents work. Good work, nice, really, really necessary. Yes? And last week in the evening we said that, you know, Martha is sort of misunderstood and maligned a bit. And, you know, Martha's an important character, but she represents work. We need to work for God's blessing, you know, for Jesus' blessing, for his purposes to be done. And she worked for Jesus, didn't she? We see Mary. She represents worship, that relationship, that looking and listening and being attentive to him. And that's important. And we have Lazarus. Lazarus actually is great. We don't hear one word from Lazarus, but his life was a witness, wasn't it? Because everyone in the region suddenly starts coming around because they want to see this guy that was dead for 4 days and then came back to life. But he never said a word. We have works, we have worship, and we have witness, interestingly, without words. His life was a witness. We're actually going to add words into that because we've got a good message to tell, haven't we? But at that point in the story, Jesus hadn't died and come back to life. Our church life, our individual lives should be a balance, a good balance of work and worship and witness. And our words every now and then just adding a bit of clarification of what it all means. I want to there's this quote from Warren Wiersbe that I quite like. He says, "This quiet evening of fellowship, in spite of the cruel way the disciples treated Mary, must have brought special encouragement and strength to our Saviour's heart as he faced the demands of that last week before the cross. We should examine our own hearts and homes to ask whether they are bringing joy to his heart by our worship, work and witness." So I just say, do you know what? Carpe diem, let's seize the day. Let's serve. Let's share. Let's worship for the applause of one. And let's see what happens. We could leave it another week, but things will have moved on. Things will have changed. So today, if you've got an encouraging word for someone or something that you know will help someone else, do it now. Do it now.